Okay, shall we begin? Okay. What I showed you last time was that if you have a differential equation and you want to solve this differential equation near an irregular singular point, then this differential equation, then the solution, when you use what is now called WKB theory, the solution has basically three parts to it. There's, the solution has some sort of exponential type structure, e to the blah. Okay, and then there's some sort of algebraic power, x to the some index. Okay, and then there's a series. And this series, it can be a Taylor-like series, or it can be a series in powers of, not in powers of x, but in powers of fractional powers of x. Okay, and typically this series is a divergent series, and therefore you cannot use an equal sign here. Okay. You can only use an asymptotic symbol, and this is all valid as x approaches some constant. That constant might be infinity. Okay. So, for example, if somebody gave you the harmonic oscillator equation, okay, that's the Schrodinger equation for the harmonic oscillator. And if you said, how does y behave as x goes to infinity, x equals infinity is an irregular singular point of that equation. Okay? So all other points of this equation are regular points, but x, so they have Taylor series. But x equals infinity is an irregular singular point. So if you want to know how things behave, we actually worked out a general formula. Okay? You remember for the equation y prime prime equals q of x times y, near an irregular singular point of this equation, the solution looks like e, and now I'm just writing down stuff that you've seen before. This is just the WKB approximation. That's what this is. Okay. So it behaves like e to the plus or minus integral of the square root of q divided by q to the 1/4. Okay. Times and this is the WKB. This is the first term in this. But if you do higher order WKB, then you end up with this series. Okay, so there's a series here. Okay? So if you wanted to solve this equation, what would it look like? It would look like y is, now, q in this case is x squared plus c. Okay? If we're interested in the behavior of this as x goes to infinity, then c is very small compared with x squared. So all we need to do is to take the square root of x squared, which is x, integrate it, which is x squared over 2. So this behaves like e to the plus or minus x squared over 2. And then we have the fourth root of this for large x. And again, c is irrelevant. Who cares about c? Okay, for large x. So this is the square root of x. okay, times a series in, because we're at infinity, it's a series in inverse powers of x, a series in inverse powers of x, and it's some series of the form sum from 0 to infinity, a sub n, and in fact it's going to be a series in powers of x squared, okay, so it'll be a series of the form x like this, okay, and this is valid as x goes to infinity. Yeah. Yeah, so the question is, how close is infinity?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the answer to your question is, when x is about 2, it is so close to infinity that this asymptotic approximation is fantastically accurate. Okay, so this calculation is done assuming that x is going to infinity, but now we have to ask, when can we use this series numerically? When is it useful? Okay? And I'm going to illustrate this point right now. Okay? Exactly right now. So, yeah. Yeah, sure. Good. This means you can't pee during class. You can't use that. Never mind. Okay. So what's an example that would illustrate? I mean, your question is, how close do you have to be to infinity before, you know, when is x so close to infinity that this is useful? Okay? So suppose the following thing happens. Actually, the following thing did happen to me. Someone walked into my office and said, I'm doing a calculation with a, this involves some statistical mechanical model. But what it boiled down to was, he had the series x to the n over n factorial. That's not so bad, right? Squared. Okay? Which is an interesting series. And the guy wanted to know the behavior of this function. Okay, how does that function behave? Okay? And the question is, can we come up with a quick prediction of how this function behaves? And it turns out it's very, very easy. It's extremely easy. Okay? So we just call this, why don't we call it y of x? Okay? So y prime of x is the sum from 1 to infinity, right? When I take a derivative, the first term is a constant. Right, so it's from 1 to infinity, x to the n minus 1 over n factorial, n minus 1 factorial. Right? And now let's multiply both sides by x. Okay? And let's differentiate it again. It's that simple. That's the sum from 1 to infinity, x to the n minus 1. Over n minus 1 factorial squared, right, which is the same thing as y. Great. So now we have a differential equation for y. We use exactly the same argument before that I showed you yesterday at x equals infinity. Okay? That's all we need to do. Just use the same argument at x equals infinity. Why? Because x equals infinity, x equals infinity is an irregular singular point. Okay, it's that simple. And so therefore, we can find the asymptotic behavior of this function, okay, y of x. And what you find is that y of x, okay, I don't want to work it out because it would take 5 minutes, but it's something like e to the square root of x, I think there's a 2, something like that, times over the square root of x, something like that, maybe the fourth root of x, times some series. Okay, it's something like this. Okay, in fact, maybe it is. Is it written here? Let's see. Yeah, I actually had it. Unbelievable. That's actually, okay, it's the
fourth root of x.
Okay, amazing. Okay. So this is a very simple result. Okay, it's very, very simple. The question is, how accurate is this result? Now, this is a series at infinity, so it's a series in inverse powers of x, you know, a sub n over x to the n. Okay? Let's take x very, very large, and let's ignore that series. In other words, let's just take the very first term in the series. So the question is, how accurate is this approximation to the function? That's the question. And in other words, how close do we have to go to infinity before this is an adequate description of that function? Now, let's make sure you understand. This is an exact statement about what the function is, and it's hard to imagine a more convergent series, right? This is not x to the n over n factorial. That's x to the n over n factorial squared. Boy, is that a fast converging series. Unbelievably fast, okay? So to compare, you know, which is better, this thing or this thing? Okay? So to find the answer, all you need to do is to plot, so we can plot two things. Number one, we could plot y of x divided by, or let's do it this way. Let's plot the series, sum from 0 to 10. We'll take 10 terms in that series. That's a fantastic, a large number of terms in that series, okay? X to the n over n factorial squared. And we'll divide it by y of x, okay? Now, as long as this ratio is 1, that means that series is a very good approximation to y of x. Okay? And the second thing we can plot is e to the 2 square root of x over x to the 1 quarter divided by y of x. And again, if this thing is 1, it means that's a very good approximation to y of x. Okay? Yeah?
Is there a reason why we don't have a plus or minus?
Yes. Because you can see there is a plus or minus, okay? But you can see that this is a function that's growing with x. So that immediately excludes the minus sign. Okay, just by inspection, you can see this is all the coefficients are positive, so it's a monotone increasing function, not a decreasing function. Okay? You understand also that it doesn't matter if you include the minus sign. Can you tell me why? Suppose we take a linear combination of the plus sign and the minus sign. Doing that doesn't change anything. You see why? It's subdominant. That's the technical term. It's exponentially small. It's an exponentially small correction, smaller than any power of x. So who cares? Okay. Asymptotics is really nice. I mean, asymptotically, for example, if I say to you, if I say to you f of x is asymptotic to x as x goes to infinity, if I say that to you, and then I ask you, what's the integral of f of x? What is that asymptotic to as x goes to infinity? Okay? So, I mean, anybody can integrate x, and you get, you know, x squared over 2 plus a constant, right? No. You don't need a constant. It doesn't matter whether you include the constant. Okay? Of course, the constant might be a higher order correction, but this is the correct integral. Asymptotics is beautifully clean and simple and wonderful. Okay, do you all understand that? All right, so the question is, which is better, that guy or this guy? Okay, and this is the question, you know, which is when you go to infinity. So let's take a look. Okay. There you go. Beautiful. Let's see. Here we go. Okay. So here, what I've done is this curve here is the sum of x to the n times over n factorial squared divided by y. That's this curve right here. And this other curve is the asymptotic approximation that we have with the correct constant out front, okay, divided by y. Okay? Now, I want you to look at this. First of all, here's the Taylor series. And of course, the Taylor series is very good when x is small. And you notice this ratio is 1. But when you get up to about 10, it begins, or a little after 10, really closer to 100, it falls off and it's absolutely worthless. That Taylor series doesn't say anything about how the function behaves at infinity. But it's good between 0 and up to around 100, okay, which is great. Okay, but what about the asymptotic approximation? The asymptotic approximation, the ratio is 1 all the way out at infinity, but it continues to be very, very, very close to 1 all the way down to about 0.01. Okay, and that's just one term in the asymptotic series compared with 11 terms, 0 to 10, in the Taylor series. So if you ask how close do you have to be to infinity, it varies, of course, from function to function. But in this case, 0.01 is sufficiently close to infinity. Okay, asymptotics is really amazing. It's really, really, really powerful. Okay, so just that simple formula tells you how this function is actually behaving. It's quite remarkable. Okay? Okay, now, let's stop that for a second. Okay, so I have a few tables that I want to show you in a moment, but I need to explain that. Yeah?
How do
I know? You mean, how do I do it numerically? How did I work that graph? Yeah, so there are several ways of doing it. I can either put the differential equation, the one that I derived, on a computer and integrate it to very high precision, and that'll give me the answer for any value of x. It's a little time-consuming, but who cares? You know, it's the computer doing the work, not me. Okay. Or, if you wanted, you could sum that series with a huge number of terms. Okay, but that's doomed to fail. When x gets sufficiently big, you got to have a huger number of terms, and when x gets even bigger, you got to have a huger number of terms. Okay, you never get there. Okay, you understand why? The reason why is that if I truncate this series is just a polynomial. But that polynomial is trying to approximate a function which is really growing exponentially. And a polynomial can never do that. But the asymptotic approximation is fantastic. Okay? Now, so the question is, why is the asymptotic approximation so good? And the reason is that a Taylor series, and I've sort of said this before, a Taylor series converges in a circle. But an asymptotic approximation doesn't converge in all directions in a circle. It only converges in a wedge of limited angle. Okay, so the reason that I looked at this harmonic oscillator equation is that you can see it very easily. Do you notice that there's a Gaussian here? Okay, and you notice that if I were to take, say, the plus sign, if I'm representing a solution to this differential equation that's growing like a Gaussian at infinity, it looks like e to the x squared over 2 times some power of x times some series. Okay, And this is valid as x goes to infinity, but not in all directions. Okay, and that's the problem. Or it's not a problem. That's the good news. The good news. So we are not asking an asymptotic series to work in all directions in the complex plane. Until now, we're only thinking of x as being real. But if we think of x as being complex, this is a valid approximation as x goes to infinity here. And it continues to be valid in this wedge here. Okay? Can you tell me what happens at this 45-degree line? This is 45 degrees. Can you see what's happening? This is the x plane, complex x plane. What happens at that line? So we're going off to infinity, and we see the function is blowing up like a Gaussian. Say it again?
Is there a branch cut?
No. Well, there's a branch cut here, but that's not the important thing. The important thing is what this is doing. Say it again? What's happening on this 45-degree line is that it is no longer growing at infinity. Right? On this line, x is some r times e to the I pi over 4. So x squared is r squared I. Right? E to the I pi over 2. So on this line, the function is no longer growing. It is oscillating. Okay, and that is the edge of the wedge of the validity of this asymptotic approximation. Where is this asymptotic approximation a good approximation to the function y? It's not good in an entire circle. It's only good in this wedge. Okay, and then you need another asymptotic approximation out here. Okay, and yet another one over here. So there are different formulas. And I'm not going to say anything more really about this because this is a technical point. But this is called the Stokes phenomenon. The good news is this. The good news for us is this. We don't ask an we don't ask as much from an asymptotic series as we do from a Taylor series. Taylor series either work inside of a circle, they either converge or they diverge. There's no other choice. But an asymptotic series is typically only valid in some wedge. How do we know where the edge of the wedge is? It's where the function is no longer growing or decaying asymptotically, but where it's oscillatory. That's the edge of the wedge. And that's typically where the asymptotic series is not going to be valid anymore. So this asymptotic approximation only needs to represent the function y inside of some wedge, but not in all directions. Okay? And because we don't ask as much of an asymptotic series as we ask of a Taylor series, that's why it can be so much better than a Taylor series, as you just saw. Okay? I mean, that's an amazing approximation. And I didn't even bother to take more terms in the asymptotic series. Just one term. Yeah.
For the harmonic oscillator, we're usually not interested in a solution which grows at infinity because of physical reasons. Is there an application for this solution in physics?
Yeah. Actually, I don't know if I should go into... Let me see. It's a really good question. I wasn't going to... okay. I'll make a brief comment about that. Okay. I don't know if I should. All right. So this equation here is called. Okay, if we want to solve the harmonic oscillator equation. To be more precise, there is something called Okay, if you ask a mathematician, what is the Schrodinger equation for the harmonic oscillator, they will say, well, this is, it's just the parabolic cylinder equation. And specifically, the parabolic cylinder equation is written minus y prime prime plus x squared over 4, okay, y is equal to nu plus 1/2 y. Okay, that is, this is the parabolic cylinder equation, and you can see that this is the case of the, this is the harmonic oscillator equation. Okay, you all see that. Okay, and the only difference is that I can turn this equation into the harmonic oscillator equation by just merely scaling x. X goes into a constant times x. Okay, so that's, so instead of writing, you know, typically, the, what you're used to in a physics course is a factor of 2 here and a factor of 2 here. But this is just as good. Okay, so you can ask, what is the asymptotic behavior? So the solutions to this equation are called parabolic cylinder functions. Parabolic cylinder functions, okay, and they're written d nu of x. So if anybody ever says to you, do you understand the quantization condition, the eigenvalues of the harmonic oscillator, tell them what I'm about to tell you now, because it's the fastest solution of the harmonic oscillator equation that you've ever seen. Okay. So how does it work? Well, I showed you asymptotically that the solution to this equation, we know what the solution to this equation behaves like as x goes to plus infinity. Okay? So we just use this general formula, and we know that as x goes to plus infinity, y of x can behave like e to the plus or minus, and now we take the square root of x squared over 4, which is x over 2, and we integrate it, so it's plus or minus x squared over 4, okay, divided by the square, the fourth root of this, which is the square root of x times the series. Okay, that's the possible solution, and in particular, the parabolic cylinder function is the solution to this equation that goes to zero as x goes to plus infinity. In other words, it's the physically, what someone, you said, we as physicists are interested in solutions that go to zero at infinity. We don't want to have things blowing up at infinity, okay? So the parabolic cylinder function is precisely the function that goes to zero at infinity, and its asymptotic behavior is explicitly e to the minus x squared over 4 divided by the square root of x. And in principle, there could be a constant out front, and that constant is 1. Okay? So this is precisely the asymptotic behavior as x goes to, this is as x goes to plus infinity. Okay? And, of course, this is multiplied by some series, but I don't care one bit about the constants in that series. If we wanted to spend, 15 minutes, we could calculate a bunch of constants in the series, but we don't care. Okay? So now, I have imposed the physical condition at plus infinity. Okay? Now, you remember I just told you that this asymptotic approximation ceases to be valid if I go outside of the wedge. And I'm not going to tell you how I got there, but eventually I'm interested in how d of x, d nu of x, behaves as x approaches minus infinity. How does it behave? Okay? And in general, it behaves like e to the minus x squared over 4 divided by the square root of x. Okay, and I don't want this to be imaginary, so I'll write the square root of minus x. That just absorbs a constant in here. And it it could also behave like e to the plus x squared over 4, square root of minus x. Okay? And there's some constant here, c1, and some constant here, c2. Okay? c2, this constant, this is bad. Okay? And this constant happens to be, I don't care what this constant is, but this constant happens to be something like 2 pi over gamma of minus nu. Okay? Now, as physicists, you would like this to go to 0 at minus infinity. It's already going to 0 at plus infinity. And what we did was we extended this asymptotic approximation around until 180 degrees around until we got to the negative axis. But we don't want that e to the plus x to the x squared over 4. Okay? We don't want it to blow up. And the only way to make it not blow up is to make that constant be 0. And therefore, gamma of minus nu is equal to 0. I'm sorry, is equal to infinity. It's in the denominator, is equal to infinity. Therefore, nu is equal to, what's nu? Nu must be 0, 1, 2. Okay? So, the eigenvalue, this is the energy, E. So the energies are 1 half, 3 halves, 5 halves, 7 halves, and so on. And those are the eigenvalues of the harmonic oscillator. Bang! Just like that. I mean, you can't imagine how powerful asymptotics makes you. Okay, do you notice I didn't say a word about Hermite polynomials? I mean, you learned that the eigenfunctions of the harmonic oscillator are exponentials times Hermite polynomials, and the Hermite polynomials truncate, and all that stuff. Forget that. We don't need that. It's irrelevant. Okay. So asymptotics really makes you very, very powerful. Yeah. The answer is that the analytic continuation of an asymptotic approximation is not the same as the asymptotic approximation of the analytic continuation. Okay? And that is called the Stokes phenomenon. When I leave the wedge in which the asymptotic approximation is valid, of course, I can analytically continue this function and this function. Those are analytic functions. Okay, this exponential e to the x squared, it's an analytic function. I could rotate it around. And of course, I can analytically rotate this function. Okay? But the asymptotic approximation does the act of approximating a function by using asymptotics does not commute with the process of analytically continuing a function. Okay? That's the principle here. Okay? And I could tell you more afterward, but this is going, I think, beyond where we should go in a 3-week course where I'm doing asymptotics in 2 days. So, okay, but I'm very happy to talk about this and discuss it. Okay, but now, the question is, the big question is, there's a big thing that's undefined. I have used the word asymptotic series. That is, we have derived a series. You know, I've written down a series here. What is an asymptotic series? Okay, so let me try to explain an asymptotic series. And to do this, let me, we need to compare a convergent series with an asymptotic series, okay? Because they look the same. This series here, so here is, let's write. Okay, here is a convergent series, a sub n x to the n. Okay? Suppose that's a convergent series. Of course, you know that series. That's a Taylor series, Okay. So suppose this is a convergent series. Okay. On the other hand, here is an asymptotic series. And it looks the same. So for example, here the coefficients a sub n might be 1 over n factorial. Okay, that's a convergent series. Here, a sub n might be n factorial or something like that. So this is a divergent series. So the question is, how do you define an asymptotic, you know, what's the definition of the word asymptotic series? Okay, so this is the definition. We say f of x is represented by the asymptotic series sum from n equals 0 to infinity, a sub n, x to the n, as x goes to 0, okay, means the following. Okay, now listen very, very carefully. It means that if we take the partial sum of this series, okay, and subtract it from f of x, so this is the nth partial sum of the series. If you subtract it, this expression here is asymptotic, okay, to the next term in the series. As x goes to 0. Okay? For all n. Okay. Now, we have to say a lot of words about this, but that's the definition of an asymptotic series. Okay? The first statement is, if this is asymptotic to that, then this formula, this relation here, tells you it's a formula for the nth term in the series. Right? In particular, f of x, if this is asymptotic to this, as x goes to 0, then the ratio of this to this is 1. And therefore, f of x minus the sum from n equals 0 to infinity, a sub n, x to the n, over x to the n plus 1 in the limit as x goes to 0 is a sub n plus 1. That's a formula for the nth term in the series. Done. So in other words, if you have a function f of x, this formula, this gives you an equation for all of the coefficients in the asymptotic series. Okay? The point is, this definition is valid even though this series may be a divergent series. Okay? So I didn't say anything about the convergence of the series. And in general, an asymptotic series diverges. In fact, in general, any series diverges. It's a very special, wonderful thing if a series doesn't diverge. Okay, now, let's make a comparison between the two. Someone comes up to you on the street, and they give you a series like this, and they say to you, is that a convergent series? Okay? Is that a meaningful question to ask? Can you answer that? I mean, can a mathematician answer that? You know, someone writes down a series, gives you the coefficients a sub n, says, is it a convergent series? Can you answer that? Yeah. What do you do?
I'd like to know, yes, if you're asked, by analogy, what's the probability of choosing an integer from a set?
Which is uncountable infinite.
Wait. This is, you're being very, very fancy. Oh, boy.
I would say no, because strictly, the probability of choosing a convergent series is zero.
Of course. It's the chance of writing down a series at random that happens to be convergent is zero. The probability is zero. But they've given you a specific series. They give you the series, and they give you an equation for the coefficients a sub n, and they say to you, is this series convergent? What do you do?
Well,
Can you say, no, that's a stupid question, or can you answer that question? What do you say? What do you do?
Look at the partial sum.
Exactly. Okay, that's very straightforward. What we do is we say define Sn as the sum from 0 to n of a sub n x to the n. That's the partial sum. And ask, does the limit as n goes to infinity exist? And of Sn exist. Okay? So, without knowing, without any other information, once a guy has written down this series, and they give it to you on a piece of paper, you calculate the nth partial sum, you let n go to infinity, and if that exists, then you say the series is convergent. So convergence of a series is an inherent property of that series. Okay, it doesn't make reference to anything else in the world. Just looking at that series and that series alone, you can answer that question yes or no. Okay? All right, same guy walks up to you on the street. Guy says to you, consider this series, and they give you a formula for the a sub n. And the guy says to you, is that an asymptotic series? What do you answer?
Depends on what functions you want.
Exactly. My God, it's wonderful. You've been listening. The point is, you say to the guy, to paraphrase what you just said, you said it politely. Okay. To paraphrase what you just said impolitely, you say to the guy, you dummy, that's a stupid question. Okay? Because the statement of whether a given series is asymptotic cannot be made. That's a meaningless question, whether a given series is asymptotic. Okay? Because the property of being asymptotic is a relative property. Okay? It turns out every series is an asymptotic series for some function, no matter what series you write down. With probability 1, exactly 1, okay? So if you write down a series and you say to me, is this an asymptotic series? I say to you, no, that's a stupid question, because the property that a series is asymptotic can only be given relative to a specific function. That is, in the definition, you notice the function f of x is used. Here, it is not used, but here it is used. Okay, so I can only answer the question: is this series asymptotic to the function f of x? Okay, but if you give me the series without a function f of x, there is a procedure which I'm not going to go into for constructing a function f of x to which this series is asymptotic, and that always works. In fact, better yet, if you're mathematically inclined, very interesting. Not only is there a function f of x to which the series is asymptotic, there is an analytic function f of x to which that series is asymptotic, which is quite amazing. Okay? So, given a function f of x, it has a unique asymptotic series with the coefficients given by this. But given an asymptotic series, there may be many functions to which that series is asymptotic. Okay? So, for example, consider the function e to the x. It has an asymptotic series representation, and that asymptotic series is the sum of x to the n over n factorial as x goes to 0. Okay? That is an asymptotic series representation of that function. As x goes to 0, let's write 0 plus to be precise. Okay? There you go. Now, in fact, this asymptotic series happens to be convergent, but I don't really care about that. because convergence, divergence, that doesn't bother me. In fact, I'm much happier if the series happens to be divergent, because I know it converges much more rapidly to the function. In this case, I'm sad because this happens to be a convergent series, but there's nothing I can do about it. Okay? Now, here is another function, and this satisfies, of course, that satisfies this definition, clearly. Okay? Now, okay, this is also asymptotic to the same series. So there are obviously many functions that can have the same asymptotic series. Okay? And so now, okay, do you see that? This also is given by this asymptotic series. Okay? Because it satisfies this condition. Okay? And that's because e to the minus 1 over x is exponentially small. Okay? So the question is, when we sum an asymptotic series, which function do you get? If there are many different functions, which function do you get when you sum the series? And that is the topic that we're going to discuss until the end of the course. That's the key topic. And what is remarkable for us as mathematical physicists, what is remarkable is that you get the answer to the physics, to give you the short answer, you get the answer to the physics problem. And you don't get one of these crazy things that some mathematician made up, okay, and which is this is an amazing fact, okay? Okay, so this is the problem, okay? But before we go deeply into this, let me make one last comment about asymptotic series. And this is what you will read if you read just a short description of asymptotic series in a book. You will learn about the optimal asymptotic approximation. Okay, if you read books about asymptotic series, they will say to you, an asymptotic series is a divergent series. That's not true. An asymptotic series could converge. It might diverge, it might converge. Okay? And they will say, if you have a divergent series, what could you do with it? How can you use it? And the answer is, a given series like this, which is typically divergent, if remember, we're taking x near A, the place where this thing is asymptotic. In this case, for simplicity, I chose 0. Okay, so when x is very near 0, think about what is happening here. This is a divergent series. But if I take x very, very near 0, the first term in the series is a0, which is some number. The next term in the series is a0 times x, or is a1 times x, okay? And if I take x very near 0, this number could be smaller than that number. If I then look at the next term in the series, it's a2x squared. Now, a2 may be getting quite big, but if I take x very, very small, this number may be even smaller than that, okay? So typically, at first, the numbers in an asymptotic series may be getting smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller, but eventually they turn around and start getting larger. Okay? So if I were to make a plot, of over here, I write down a(n) x to the n. That's the nth term in the asymptotic series, and I put over here n. Typically, you see something like this. The numbers are getting smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller in absolute value. And then, eventually, they turn around and they start coming back up and they diverge. Okay? There is something called an optimal asymptotic approximation. And what you do is you say, look, the error, the difference between f of x and the first n terms in the series is asymptotic to this. So to get the best asymptotic approximation, I want to make the right-hand side as small as possible. So I must find the n such that this guy is small. OK? So to make it as small as possible, I look at this graph over here, and I say, ah, that is the smallest term. So that says that if I just sum up these terms in the asymptotic series, the error, that is the asymptotic approximation to the error, that's not necessarily exactly the error, but the best approximation that I can make to the error is as small as I can get. Okay? Now you understand, if I take x smaller, the picture may look like this. Okay? So if for smaller values of x, I can take more terms in the series to get the optimal asymptotic approximation. Now, did you understand what I said? This is the simplest, most naive way of extracting information from an asymptotic series. I go to the place where the error, that is the difference between the function you are trying to calculate, the function you're trying to represent, and the first n terms in the series, is as small as you can make it. Do you understand? Okay, so let's look at what happens. Okay. Okay. Let's see. Yeah. Okay. So I'm just, this is, it may be hard to read the numbers because there are a lot of them, but I think you'll get the point. What I have written down here is I've just taken a random function, okay? And in this case, this is I5. So this is the associated Bessel function of degree 5, picked just at random. Some crazy thing, okay? And what I've written down is the asymptotic series that represents e to the minus x times I5 of x. Okay, so I've multiplied off the exponential term in the asymptotic approximation. And I'm taking this asymptotic series, and I'm taking more and more terms in the asymptotic series for a given value of x. Now, this asymptotic series is valid at infinity. And I'm going back to answer your question about how close do we have to be to infinity before we're happy. Okay, so here is e to the minus x I5 of x. And I'm using the asymptotic series to calculate that. Okay, now, you see that these numbers are underlined? That is the optimal asymptotic approximation. Okay, and so x equals 3 is quite close to infinity. So for x equals 3, you need to take 1, 2, 3, 4, for that many terms in the optimal asymptotic approximation. Then the asymptotic series, the terms in the series begin to grow again, so we don't use them. Okay? And this answer gives you a very, so if you take too many terms, you see that this error, this is a ridiculous answer. The correct answer, the exact value, is 4.5 blah, 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 times 10 to the minus 3. And we're getting 5.5 times 10 to the minus 3. So it's very, very nice, a very nice approximation. Okay, here, we take x equals 4. We're closer to infinity. We get to take more terms in the asymptotic series. Okay, what I'm getting here is 9.19. times 10 to the minus 3. And the exact answer is 9.24 times 10 to the minus 3. Much better. Okay. So here the error in the asymptotic approximation was 21%. Here the error is 0.5%. Okay. Much better. Now I go even closer to infinity, namely x equals 5. Okay, it's very close to infinity. Okay, I take this many terms, more terms in the asymptotic series, and the error is 0.069 or 0.07%. 0.07% error. Fantastic. Okay, so now I'm going to go even closer to infinity. I'm going to go to x equals 6. Okay, so I take even more terms in the asymptotic approximation. And the error is now 0.002%. You get that? 0.002%. And this is at x equals 6. And just to rub it in, okay, here's x equals 7. This is now so close to infinity that you can hardly see a difference. And in fact, this is the number of terms in the optimal asymptotic approximation. And the error is 0.0007%. OK? So this is how accurate this divergent series is. So the divergent series, an asymptotic series, typically shoots right toward the answer. And it goes very, very close to the answer. And then, like a bad boy, it runs away. It's the tortoise and the hare, okay? You know the tortoise and the hare story, okay? The tortoise wins the race, but it takes forever. It's really slow moving, okay? The hare comes very close to the finish line and then falls asleep. The tortoise wins the race, okay? So the difference between a Taylor series and an asymptotic series is that the Taylor series is the tortoise. A convergent series is a tortoise. It eventually converges to the answer if you have the patience to add up an infinite number of terms. But if you want to get to the answer fast and have a simple representation of it, you use asymptotics. Because in a few terms, you get a fantastic error. Then, of course, it runs away again. Okay? So naive summation of an asymptotic series is already fantastic. Okay. However, in this course, I promised you something much more. Here, there was an optimal result that was whose error was 0.00007%. But I said to you, I can get you arbitrarily close to the right answer. Okay. So what we have to do now is, to get arbitrarily close to the answer, is you take as many terms in this series as you like, but now you padé it. And now, as you take more and more terms in the series, it doesn't just go to the optimal asymptotic approximation and then veer away. It comes closer and closer and closer and faster and faster and faster, closer, you know, and it gets as close as you like. Okay? Yeah. Yeah.
Numerically, when you want to compute these ace events, the coefficients of the asymptotic series, you have to evaluate that limits, right?
Oh, if I had the function, okay. But typically, I'm not given the function explicitly. Typically, I'm given a differential equation, for example, for the function. And so I just obtain the series directly from the differential equation. And that procedure is very, very simple. It's like a Taylor series. You know, you find the Taylor coefficients. And the point, one thing you should remember, is that typically, a Taylor series representation of some Bessel function contains all kinds of irrational terms in it, like gamma of n plus a quarter and things like this, which you then have to evaluate numerically to even be able to write down the coefficients in the Taylor series. But the asymptotic series coefficients are typically rational numbers. They're happy just to be rational numbers. So you can work with those coefficients very easily and teach elementary school students to do the calculation.
Okay. Suppose that we have a very complicated function, and numerically it's not that efficient to, you know, evaluate that function directly, and we want to find an asymptotic series to evaluate that instead of the original function. Mm-hmm. So in that case, we have to evaluate this limit.
Yes, and it may be that the simplest way to do it is, it may be that this is very, very difficult to evaluate. This is just a theoretical definition. You remember what I did for this? Remember, I wrote this problem on the board to begin with, the sum of x to the n over n factorial squared. What did I do? I said, let's I could not evaluate that limit just for the series. So what I did was I said, let's find a differential equation that that sum satisfies. And then I found the asymptotic approximation to the solution of that differential equation. And that is a very, very, that's a very standard procedure. Okay, the differential equation is much, much easier to extract the asymptotic series.
So we have to find the differential equation that the function satisfies?
That is a very, very powerful, that's not always the thing that we do, but that's a very, very powerful and general procedure. Okay. Yeah.
So for quantum field theories, we don't know what f of x is, or we don't know the differential equation.
That's right.
And that's
all
when
we
cut a...
To get the asymptotic series, all we have is a set of Feynman rules.
Yeah. So the, so I guess the optimal asymptotic approximation is more subtle there, or is there some...
No. We can use, you know, if... let me see. Did I have... hang on a second. I want to write on the board to answer your question. But I have one last... transparency to show you. This is a graph of that asymptotic approximation. Okay, so I showed you the numbers before, but this graph is easier to read. So look what happens. As you get closer to infinity, you could take more and more terms in the asymptotic approximation. Now, this smooth curve, that is the function e to the minus x times I 5 of x. This jumpy curve is the asymptotic approximation, and that's valid at infinity. Notice here, see over here, see the number n equals 7? When you get to this value of x, there are 7 terms in the optimal asymptotic approximation, and it's oscillating about the true answer. Okay, you see that? And then when x gets bigger, you can use 8 terms, and then 9 terms, and 10 terms. And you see that the asymptotic approximation, at first, the optimal asymptotic approximation, jumps about the answer with smaller and smaller jumps. And as soon as you get to about x equals 4, you can't see the difference anymore. That's why you needed to have that table. And now, the asymptotic approximation follows this function all the way out to infinity. And remember, by the time you're at 7, the error is 0.00007%, there's no point in trying to distinguish on a graph between the two. Okay, so you can see how powerful the asymptotic series is already. Okay, it's very, very powerful. Okay, but now, let's... Now, say again what the question.
So I was wondering, for quantum field theory, we don't know what either f of x is or what differential equation it satisfies.
Right.
We just have a few terms on the asymptotic series
right.
on the right side.
So to be explicit, suppose you were doing a calculation in a quantum field theory where the coupling constant is g, and you are adding up Feynman diagrams, and you're very strong. So you might get 4 terms in the series, and that's it. Okay. So your asymptotic series goes A0 plus maybe, you know, A1G, those are the easy Feynman diagrams, and A2G squared, and A3G cubed. Maybe that's a three-loop diagram. If you're very, very strong, you might get A4G to the fourth. And this is some asymptotic series, it's typically divergent, okay, that represents the Green's function. And this is valid in the limit as g goes to 0, and typically as g goes to 0 plus. Okay, only in one side, only in some wedge. Okay, now you want to know how good is this series. Let's suppose you haven't said anything about pad A yet. You just want to use the optimal asymptotic approximation. Again, what we do is we make a plot. Here's n. And we plot a sub n g to the n. Okay? And for n equals, you know, here's n equals 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay? And for a given value of g, say 0.3, that's your favorite value of g, let's say the series coefficients go like this. Okay? Typically, they will go like that. Okay? Now, what do we do? If you only know the optimal asymptotic approximation, the best you can do for this value of g, this is g equals, say, 0.3, is to add up these two terms in the series. Why? Because that's the error. Okay, here it is on the right. That's the error between the thing you're representing. This is the f is the Green's function, and that's your series. Okay, so the best you can do, if you know optimal asymptotic approximations but not Pade theory, is to add these two terms together and say that's the best answer I can produce. Okay, if on the other hand you wanted to take g equals 0.1, the picture wouldn't look like this. Now it would look like this. There's the zero term. This term is smaller. This term is smaller. That is still smaller. And the fourth one starts to go up again, say. Okay? So now, what would you do? You would take this number of terms in the series, and this is your estimate of the error. Okay? That's your best estimate of the error. And so you can read off the predicted error in the asymptotic approximation. That's it. That's how big your error is going to be. And that's all you can say so far. Okay? So, I think I've given you a sort of review of asymptotic series. Now I want to give you just a preview. Are there any questions? Are any other questions about asymptotic series? Yeah.
These asymptotic series are just in one dimension. Are there applications and are there methods to apply this to more dimensions?
Double asymptotic series and things like that. Yeah, that gets really complicated. That typically gets very, very complicated, and that's because there are questions of, you know, you have a double sum, and there are questions of whether you can interchange orders of summation and multiple Pade approximants and things like that. You have two small parameters. Typically, we would prefer to work with only one small parameter. So if you had a problem that had two parameters that you wanted to treat as small, what I would say, you know, you had some equation or other, you know, minus y prime prime plus v of x plus, and now you have epsilon w of x plus delta u of x psi, you know, times y equals ey. And you have two small parameters here, okay? My advice to you would be you could proceed, but we're now entering very dangerous territory. I would just say replace delta by some constant, fixed constant c times epsilon, and reduce the number of small parameters. If you have two small parameters, treat one small parameter as a constant times the other small parameter and reduce it to a one-dimensional problem. Okay, that's the first thing that I would do. And I would go as far as I could. I would not want to have a double asymptotic series. That gets quite elaborate. But, you know, people think about things like that. Okay, so here is what I want to tell you. Here is what we're going to talk about in the last lecture on how to sum asymptotic series for physical problems. Okay? Okay. So, the theory goes back to Stieltjes. Okay? And I'm going to define for you something called a Stieltjes function, which is a wide class of functions are called Stieltjes functions. And I'm going to define for you something called a Stieltjes series, which is connected with the Stieltjes function. Okay, so it goes like this. Suppose we have a function, and this is going to look a little bit, you're going to have a feeling of deja vu, which is the reason why I'm telling you this. Suppose we have a function w of x, which is called a weight function, and suppose w of x is a positive weight function. It's allowed to pass through zero. But it cannot be negative. And that's crucial, absolutely crucial. So W of x is never negative, okay, for x greater than or equal to 0. Okay? Furthermore, W of x falls off at infinity. So we want W of x to go to 0 as x goes to plus infinity. And it has to go to 0 so fast that the nth moment of W exists. Okay? So the integral from 0 to infinity, W of x times x to the n, dx, that's called the nth moment of the wave function W. That integral has to exist for all n. Okay? That integral never diverges for any value of n. Okay? And we're going to call this a sub n. Okay? So now, what is a Stieltjes series? So 1 What's a Stieltjes series? A Stieltjes series is a series of the form sum from 0 to infinity minus 1 to the n, a sub n times x to the n. That is a Stieltjes series. Okay? So if you're ever walking down the street, and some guy comes up to you and he says, I have a series of that form. Okay? I have a series, an alternating series of this form. Can you tell me about this series? The first thing you do is you look at these coefficients. And if these coefficients can be written as the nth moment of some positive weight function greater than or equal to 0, you turn back to the guy with a smile on your face, and you say, you, sir, have a Stieltjes series. Okay? Because the guy may have no idea what the significance of that is, but you're going to see that this is highly significant. What it means, basically, is that you can sum that series, even if it's divergent. You can sum the series, and you can get an arbitrarily accurate answer. Okay? That's what you're going to see. Okay, now the second thing is, a Stieltjes function. So what is a Stieltjes function? Okay, so, yeah.
How can we see if the AA is the moment of the circle?
You can't. Typically, that's a really hard problem. So that's why I'm not... So the you have asked the key question, how can we tell? And typically, we can only tell indirectly. And there are theorems that say that these coefficients, that I will tell you the theorems, okay? But there are theorems that tell you that, yes, these coefficients can be written in that form. That is, there's a solution to the moment problem. Okay, the moment problem says, you give me an infinite number of numbers a sub n, and I try to calculate a function w. Of course, in some cases, you can see it right away. Okay? I mean, for example, just as an example, suppose I gave you the numbers, suppose a sub n, suppose a 0 is 0, and a n is just 1 over n. Could you solve the moment problem in this case? Or to make it a little better, let's make it 1 over n plus 1. Plus a sub n for all n. Can you solve the moment problem? That is to say, can you tell me a function w which gives this?
So 0 is 1.
Say
0, 1.
Very good. So you solved it in your head, okay? The solution is,
that w of x is 1 for x between 0 and 1, okay, and 0 for x greater than or equal to equal to 1, okay, or greater than 1, okay? And so in that case, you solve the Molnar problem. The integral of x to the n is 1 from 0 to 1 is just 1 over n plus 1. So in that case, you could see the solution to the Molnar problem. And by the way, that is a unique solution. It happens to be a unique solution. The solution is not always unique, and we're going to talk about that. This is a very deep question. And the key question is, given a set of numbers, can we find W? Let's not ask that question yet. That's deep. Very deep. Okay? Now, in fact, that's the key point. That's precisely the thing that we have to discuss. Okay. Now, what is a Stieltjes function? So we'll just conclude with that. A Stieltjes function is a function f of x which has the form integral from 0 to infinity dt of w of t over 1 plus xt. That is a Stieltjes function. Okay? So, if somebody walks up to you and gives you a function of this form, you smile. You say to the guy, do you know what? Your function is a function of Stieltjes. It's a function of Stieltjes type. Okay? And the first thing you can see right away is that this has an asymptotic series approximation. Okay? I can immediately expand 1 over 1 plus xt as the sum of minus 1 to the n of x to the n t to the n. And I'm not even going to worry about whether we're inside or outside the radius of convergence of that series. And I will integrate term by term. If I make this substitution in here, and I integrate term by term, I cannot say that this is equal to the series, sum from 0 to infinity, minus 1 to the n, a sub n, x to the n. I can't say that, because since I've interchanged orders of integration and summation, this may well be a divergent series. But I don't care, okay? Because this is an asymptotic series as x goes to 0 plus. So, the bottom line is this. This is a definition of a Stieltjes series. This is a definition of a Stieltjes function. But the asymptotic expansion of a Stieltjes function is a Stieltjes series. Okay? Now, what I'm going to show you, here's the preview for next time. What I'm going to show you is that if you have a Stieltjes function, then it has four crucial properties. Okay, the first property is that this function is an analytic function in the cut plane. Second property is that it has an asymptotic expansion, this, and this asymptotic expansion is also valid in the cut plane. That's the opening of the Stokes wedge. So it covers the entire cut plane. The third property is the behavior of this function at infinity, namely that it goes to 0, falls off at infinity. And the fourth property is that the function is Hergelots, which is a property that we have to define. But I love that word. How would you like to have the name Hergelots? So this is just a funny word. I like it. Okay. So a given Stieltjes function is a Hergelots, has the Hergelots property, four properties. Okay? And you might say, so what? Well, that theorem also works in reverse. That is, if I have a function which is analytic in the cut plane that has an asymptotic series representation in the cut plane that has a certain behavior at infinity, that is, it goes to 0 at infinity, and last,
this function is Hurvitz, then you know it's a Stieltjes function. Once you know it's a Stieltjes function, then we can show that the Pade approximant, this is a very deep and beautiful theorem, you can show that the Pade approximant for this Stieltjes series converges. Okay? So the PNNs converge downward, the PNN plus 1s converge upward, and both of those sequences of P's converge just because it's a Stieltjes function. However, here comes the kicker. They don't have to converge to the same thing. They might converge to the wrong answer. So we need property 5. And property 5 guarantees that the Pades converge to the same answer and, in fact, to the right answer. Okay? And that is true. That will be true if, and here's, I'm going back to the question you just asked me. That will be true if there is a unique solution to the moment problem. And the you could spend your life studying the existence and uniqueness of solutions to the moment problem. It is a very beautiful and deep problem. But I'm going to give you a condition, which if it's this is a sufficient condition, that there is a unique solution. Okay, it is not a necessary, but it guarantees that there is a unique solution, and that's property 5. That's called the Carloman condition. Okay, and it says that these numbers a sub n don't grow too rapidly. So that statement is basically if a sub n grows no faster than 2n factorial, then there's a unique solution to that problem. And then we know rigorously that the Pades converge and they converge to the right answer. And that's the key thing. And what is amazing is that, for example, in quantum mechanics, all four of those properties are satisfied. Okay, so this is an amazing fact about quantum mechanics. Quantum mechanics loves us because it has all four of those properties. And I'm going to show you that. Okay? And it is probably true that quantum field theory has all of those properties, at least some of the quantum field theories, at least the super renormalizable quantum theories. It is unknown whether or not renormalizable theories like electrodynamics have those properties. If you could establish that, then, well, I think you should get, you know, a really big prize, because that basically says that quantum field theory falls into the same class as ordinary quantum mechanical theories. Nobody knows the answer to that question yet. That's an open question. Okay? And that basically will finish the discussion that we've started, right? We said we're going to learn how to extract information from a divergent series, and that I will lay out for you the conditions for being able to do so. And in some sense, it's incomplete because there are a lot of theories where we don't know if it works. So the best we can do is to pade and hope that we're getting the right answer. Yeah. Okay. are there questions before? Yeah. Yeah.
In the last lecture, we had the epsilon in the partition function. The epsilon was once it was beside the epsilon.
The x to the 4 term, and then yeah, once it was beside the x squared.
Squared and x to the 4.
Right.
But in the very very first algebraic equation that we were discussing, x to the 5 plus x equals 1. You said there's an alternative thing we can do that put an epsilon squared beside x to the 5 and one epsilon beside x. Mm-hmm. Can we do that in this problem too?
In quantum field theory.
Yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh. That's what we talked about at the end. That gives you what is called the strong coupling expansion.
No. One epsilon squared and at the same time one epsilon.
Oh, but then again, yeah, you can do that. And that, sure. I mean, again, what you're thinking about is putting in two small parameters, okay? And you can do things like that. However, it may be that you're not doing anything new, because remember, I can always rescale the field. I can always rescale the field phi. Phi goes into psi times some algebraic power of epsilon, and I may be able to reduce it to a previous case where there's only one epsilon present. However, if you have a more complicated quantum field theory, yes, indeed, you may want to put an epsilon here and an epsilon squared there. And that may be a particularly useful way to organize your perturbation series. That's right. But you typically want to have a more complicated theory. If there are only three terms in the action, then putting in two epsilons is not usually useful, because we have the scaling property. Okay? Yeah. Yeah.
In the large N theories, is that something we do that we are putting
in? So for large N, 1 over N plays the role of epsilon. So that is a very valid perturbation theory. However, you know what the problem is. The first term in a 1 over N expansion has very, very, very nice properties. It has really wonderfully nice properties. It gives planar graphs and so on. And have you talked about that?
No.
Okay, but you get planar graphs. But the next term in the perturbation series is really hard to calculate. And the next term is just about over the horizon. It's hopeless. So we would like to so you have to hope that from just the first term in the perturbation series, the planar graphs, that it's already giving you a pretty accurate representation of the physics and the theory, because you can't do much more. That's an example of a perturbation theory where you can get the zeroth term, and where in principle you could hire an army of high school students to calculate away, but you may not get the next term. It's really, really hard. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. So next time we will talk about Stieltjes series.
Yeah. I was wondering, when we draw the Feynman diagrams, you said that you can also present them as amazing.